Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. And we both welcome you back to another jam-packed and important episode of The New World Next Week, which, of course, you can find everything you need at NewWorldNextWeek.com. James, we heard this story a couple of months ago, and I see it staring at me from our own Oregonian today as I come to you from Portland, Oregon. People talk, TriMet buses are listening. Oregon's largest transit agency has trumpeted the looks, comfort, and fuel efficiency of its 55 new 3000 series buses, which include four hybrids. But there's one feature on the new buses that's been kept pretty hush-hush: the onboard microphones. With the new 3000 series, TriMet joins the list of public transit agencies across the country that are quietly installing microphone-enabled surveillance systems on buses, creating worries about warrantless eavesdropping along the way. The new 42-foot vehicles have multiple onboard microphones constantly recording everything from rider conversations to strange mechanical noises, just in case the audio needs to be used in crash investigations, customer complaint reviews, and criminal cases. Quote, audio recording is a capability that came standard with the new buses, said TriMet spokeswoman Mary Fetch. It's not something special we ordered, but we are using it as part of the surveillance system. TriMet said state law allows the microphones because each bus has a prominently placed sign advising riders that they are being recorded. Buses are also public spaces where it could be argued that it's not what the law calls a reasonable expectation of privacy. At the same time, Fetch said neither the video nor the audio will be routinely monitored. As always, she said, it will be pulled only when requested to review incidents. The audio, like the video, is also stored for a limited number of hours, typically 48 to 72. And if nothing happens, it constantly records over itself. Back in December, Wired Magazine and TheDaily.com highlighted Eugene, Oregon, in a report on the growing number of cities installing microphones on buses, sometimes with the funding help from our good friends at the Department of Homeland Security. Last year, for example, San Francisco's Muni system used a $6 million Homeland Security grant to install an audio surveillance system on 357 buses and even the city's vintage trolley cars. James, I'll include some of the other links to the Oregonian, and you can see the stickers and the ads that are in the buses that say you're being recorded, and also that Wired magazine report from back in 2012. The funny thing, James, yes, funny for lack of a better word, for whatever reason, and I use TriMet, that's how I get around in the city. For whatever reason, the line that I use to get me to and from my jobby job doesn't have any of these new buses. And I know when I first saw them rolled out, I was like, oh, damn, those look pretty fancy. I look forward to maybe riding on one of those. But those only have video surveillance. Or I'm sorry, the old ones, you know, that I ride have video surveillance. But the new ones will have audio and video. James, what do you think?
The voice recorder came standard with the new buses. We didn't order it. The fingerprint scanner came standard with the new iPhones. The Big Brother telescreen came standard with the new TV. Isn't it funny, again, to use that word, how this technology is increasingly woven into the fabric of the products that we're buying, whether or not we want them, whether or not we were ever thinking that we needed that option? There it is. And I wonder why. I wonder why they thought to put that standard in all of these buses. Well, I think the answer is obvious. I think the most frightening part of all of this is that I guarantee you that the entire process of this rollout in Oregon and everywhere else across the country is going to consist of maybe one newspaper story that covers it, and then it goes away because people will just accept it. In fact, the scariest part to me is that probably a lot of people out there are thinking, well, weren't they already doing this? I think we're getting to that point in the Big Brother surveillance state panopticon that people have so internalized being constantly watched, spied on, and listened to in public that they don't even remember what it's like to not be spied on anymore, and I don't think many people care. I hope I'm just being cynical about this, and a lot of people resist, but I ain't holding my breath for it.
Mm-hmm. I will implore folks to go check out these links. As always, don't take our word for anything. Follow all these stories and go do more research for yourself. The comments on these stories from the Oregonian are interesting, in the first one being that someone says, all you got to do is go to this bus's company, Gillis, I think they're called, that are giving the new 3000 series. And you can look at it and see, it's like, no, it sure says the surveillance is an extra added custom feature that does not come standard in the buses. There's also lots of, I think, good comments on both sides of the fence. where, you know, one guy says, well, Big Brother's, you know, alive and well here in Portland. And someone comments and says, dude, you've made 5,000 comments on the Oregonian website. I could just as easily find out your Facebook account where, like, you're giving up all this information yourself and now you want to gripe about the bus, which is, I think, a good touche point.
No, it is a good point. But then again, there's the difference between voluntarily giving up information, which you can do if you want to, and being forced to give up information. So I think there is a difference, but it is a good point that we do so readily buy into all of this with our Facebooking and Twittering and all of this garbage that unfortunately puts so much of our information out there, whether we understand that concept or not.
The last word I'll say about it is also the articles kind of point out, you know, what another way to kind of put a stop to ever wanting to make conversation with anybody in the city. And that's something that, you know, being a West Virginia boy, I've always kind of hated. When you move into a city, you have to compact yourself into some sort of, I live in a city, I can't weep and make eye contact and help every single person out. I got to, you know, do for me. This is just another way to make you get on the bus and everyone immediately heads down looking at their smartphones. And that's pretty much how it's going to have to continue.
To be fair, if you were weeping and making eye contact with me, I'd be a little bit uncomfortable. So,
I guess what I'm trying, you know, there's no, you have to lose any kind of compassion you may have.
James, I understand.
I won't cry on the bus today, I swear. Our second story, James, gets into some Asia-Pacific perspective kind of territory as we'll grab a couple of pieces from all the great sources like the Council on Foreign Relations and Reuters and the Wall Street Journal, which has an interesting quick post, G7 tries to put currency genie back in the bottle. And it starts out by saying, you know, it's not like Ben Bernanke's going to go to Congress and ask for a declaration of currency war. The G7 nations, the U.S., the U.K., France, Germany, Italy, Canada, and Japan, issued a joint statement today. That's Wednesday, February 13th, still here in the States. Issued a joint statement today in an attempt to defuse all this talk of a currency war and ahead of a meeting with their counterparts in the wider G20 later this week in Moscow. Quote, we reaffirm that our fiscal and monetary policies have been and will remain oriented towards meeting our respective domestic objectives using domestic instruments and that we will not target exchange rates, end quote, G7 finance ministers and central bank governors said in a statement published by the UK Treasury. This all after the Japanese under new Prime Minister Shinzo Abe specifically and repeatedly targeted the yen. And the statement was interpreted by the market as giving a green light to Japan's implicit yen policy. A quick note on that from Reuters. Currencies volatile as investors eye G20. Currency trading was volatile again on Wednesday, February 13th, as concerns about currency wars and the fallout from mixed messages from the G7 put added focus on a meeting of world leaders in Moscow later this week. James, you are in Japan and you know quite a bit more about this currency war. Can you explain it to a dummy like me?
Well, basically, the idea is that the more you devalue your currency, the more cheaply you can sell your products to countries, other countries. And the whole process of the currency war is that it is a race to the bottom. Whoever devalues their currency the most and the fastest wins in this game. And any country that doesn't go around trying to devalue their currency actually loses out. And that's the process through which this becomes a type of war that becomes this race to debase. And the funny thing about this is that, I mean, this statement by the G7 is not only not worth the paper that it's written on, it's worth even less. I mean, it's something they're already violating, the spirit and the letter of this statement. And we see that with Shinzo Abe here in Japan and the policy, the 2% inflation policy, which means they're going to keep printing yen till the cows come home and hopefully get inflation going, so they say. And it's also exactly what's happening in America with QE3 and QE4 pumping $85 billion a month into the economy via the Fed, and exactly the same process happening in the Eurozone with all of these Eurozone bailouts and the ECB funny money and the EFSF and the ESM and all of these agencies that are creating money for the bailouts. So it is happening right now, and the only countries that will lose out in this are the ones that do not devalue their currency, because that makes it less competitive on the international market, which is exactly why, for example, Venezuela just devalued their currency as well. And they can do that because they have fixed exchange rates. They can do that just by fiat, just by saying they devalue. But most of the countries that we live in and others live in, they have to do that by printing more and more money. That's exactly what's happening. That's not going to change regardless of this statement from the G7. So I guess all we can do is buckle down, strap in, and wait for the ride down. And while we're doing that, of course, we have to get into alternative currencies and start building up the alternative economies that don't have anything to do with this globalist, bankster-created fiat funny money system.
That's not what I was about to say. To keep using and abusing the word funny, it's funny money. James, as again, speaking of Twitter, I add a kind of auto tweet to my Twitter feed at Media Monarchy, where anything and everything video or audio wise that the Council on Foreign Relations puts out, I automatically tweet it out under hashtag listening to the enemy. And they just last night put out a new video called the G20 Prospects and Challenges for Global Governance. So I think that puts it pretty simply, James. Our third and final story, and speaking of the Federal Reserve, I believe they were just hacked recently by Anonymous. Our third and final story we get from the aforementioned Wired. Executive order aims to facilitate sharing of information on threats. President Barry Satoru signed an executive order on Tuesday, February 12th, designed to make it easier to disseminate classified information on threats against critical infrastructure systems and to lay the groundwork for obtaining information from the private sector that would help the government protect critical infrastructures in the U.S. This order, which runs 8 pages long, and we do provide the PDF link for you, directs the Attorney General's Office, the Office of Homeland Security, Secretary Janet Napolitano, and the Director of National Intelligence to issue instructions to their agencies that would, quote, ensure the timely production of unclassified reports of cyber threats to the U.S. homeland that identify a specific targeted entity, end quote, to Congress, and also develop a program for providing classified cyber threat and technical information from the government to eligible critical infrastructure companies or commercial service providers that blah, blah, blah. To that end, the order also calls for the government to expedite security clearances to appropriate personnel employed by critical infrastructure owners and operators so that they can receive information necessary to protect their systems. It is the policy of the United States government to increase the volume, timeliness, and quality of cyber threat information shared with private sector entities. This order, James, published in conjunction, with a new presidential directive on cybersecurity, which also we have the PDF for you, follows numerous failed attempts by Capitol Hill to pass the controversial cybersecurity legislation that, among many, many, many other things, would have given private companies legal immunity to share info with the government. James?
What this is really at base is an end run around even the idea that you need any kind of congressional approval to do something. This is executive action, basically putting things into law by fiat decree from up on high. And I know that you and most of the listeners understand this already, but I certainly hope you can help spread this awareness to other people that America is already a dictatorship in so many different ways. And all of that protest and everything that was happening around CISPA and the idea that the government was going to be setting up these kind of back doors into the various companies and ISPs and everything that have your personal information so that they can address cybersecurity threats. All of that protest and action around things like CISPA was meaningless because now Obama can come along through the back door and say, hey, guess what? I'm just going to sign a piece of paper and that means I have the power to do this. And we see this, of course, not only in the cybersecurity arena, but more and more with using the EPA to do backdoor end runs on climate change legislation and things like this. So more and more America is just a fiat dictatorship. I know you know this. I know a lot of people out there understand this, but more and more people have to understand this and what it really means. And to try to claw back some of that power somehow in some way, and good luck with that, because unfortunately power only ever seems to accrue. It never seems to actually leave these offices. But at any rate, that's the situation, and this is just another excuse to try to get government's claws into various private businesses to get more information from them and to deputize them so that they can become more like InfraGuard and all of these other agencies and institutions that are supposedly fighting terror but are really just becoming part of that government Department of Homeland Security matrix.
Thank you for mentioning InfraGuard. It was in my mind and I was going to throw it in there. That's the thing. It's, you know, let's have all this bureaucracy that will ultimately lead to idiotic boondoggles because you've given out too many security clearances to places like Walmart that are a part of critical infrastructure. You know that when the poop hits the fan, places like Walmart are going to be hugely involved in some kind of, you know, post-catalyzing catastrophic event kind of cleanup.
Don't worry, ladies and gentlemen, Walmart is here to help. Report to your local citizen spy officer. Everything will be fine.
And you can, you know, get, it's not too late. You can still get your flu shot while you're there.
James, sad because it's true.
I know. Yeah, that's so. I guess the operative word of this episode, used and abused, is funny. It's funny that. In closing, James, I'll just briefly point folks. Of course, I work as the producer of Ground Zero with Clyde Lewis, and it's been really interesting. I've never worked at a commercial radio station. To be there when things such as yesterday kind of go down and you watch these things kind of play out in real time with Christopher. I'm calling him Droner. Christopher Dorner, the LAPD manhunt. It's really interesting to watch all that stuff kind of play out in a newsroom. So I'll point folks to Ground Zero for last night's episode as we kind of went through it as it was kind of happening. And again, we're on the West Coast, so we were, you know, pretty much up to date with all the things going on. We've also gotten into, of course, all the occult media dancing around. And tonight we're going to dive into, of course, the papal announcements. So all your paranormal and parapolitical action over at Ground Zero. That's my other gig.
Good stuff. I'm looking forward to hearing about that, because obviously the Pope's exit is extremely interesting in the timing and everything. Also on Corbett Report notes, I will be having my third part of the Gladio series with Sybilla Edmonds tomorrow, so people can look forward to that coming out on CorbettReport.com this weekend. But that's going to do it for this episode. So James, once again, thank you for your work.
Thanks so much, man. Take care.